I'm Melody Simmons, sitting in for Dan Rodericks this hour. Put down that bacon, throw away those eggs, and forget about milk and cheese. In this hour of midday, we'll step into the plant-based kitchen of Isa Chandra Moskowitz, author of Vegan with a Vengeance. She'll tell us how to veganize some of our favorite carnivorous dinners and desserts. Our regular Midday Eats guests, Henry Hong of Tame Street Oyster House and John Shields of Gertrude's, join us as well to discuss some of their favorite vegan recipes, including I Can't Believe It's Not Crab Zucchini Cakes. Not a fan of vegan dining? Maybe it's time to take a chance on tofu and tempeh. That's Midday Eats after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Melody Simmons, sitting in for Dan Rodericks. In this hour, another edition of Midday Eats with Hong and Shields. Joining me in the studio now is Henry Hong of the Tame Street Oyster House and John Shields, owner and head chef at Gertrude's at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you.
Hey, long time no see.
Long time no see. Glad you're back. Today, Midday Eats is about vegan cooking. So all the recipes we're talking about are free of not only meat and poultry, but milk, egg, cheese, butter, or any other animal byproduct. Also joining us by phone from Omaha, Nebraska, is another guest, vegan cooking expert, Isa Chandra Moskowitz. Welcome, Isa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Welcome to Midday. Isa is a punk rocker, magazine columnist, and author of 8 cookbooks, including Vegan Pie in the Sky, Vegan Brunch, and Appetite for Reduction. Her column, Nickel and Dined, is published in Bust Magazine, and she's written for Vegetarian Times and Natural Health. Her most recent book, released in June, is a 10-year anniversary reissue of her first cookbook, Vegan with a Vengeance, published by DeCapo Press and Lifelong Books. Isa, thanks for joining us today. Talk a little bit about the vegan world. I know that you describe yourself as a punk rock priestess of all things tasty and animal free. That's what's on your book jacket.
Okay, I don't describe myself that way, but that's okay.
Well, talk a little bit about the vegan world, if you could.
Sure. I mean, I think over the past 10 years since the book's come out, vegan cuisine has just become kind of a force of its own, and it's being taken a little bit more seriously in the culinary world, which is great, and people cooking with real ingredients and just showing that other food can be delicious and creative and satisfying and really good for your health, the planet, and animals.
And you've written a total of 9 books, is it? Or is it 8, and then 9 would be this reissue?
Yeah, so 8 plus, yeah, this reissue.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how your recipes have developed over the years.
I think I've gotten more streamlined. So when I first started writing vegan cookbooks, I wanted to do things that were a little bit more creative with ingredients that weren't you might not have laying around the house, just to make it a little bit more exciting for people. So I guess as time went by, I realized convenience is way more important than excitement when making recipes. So I've just streamlined a lot of the ingredients so that they're pantry staples that you'll have around, but this food will still come out exciting and wonderful without having to make like a million trips to the grocery store. I think living in Omaha really helped me, like having grown up in Brooklyn. I thought everybody had pomegranate molasses at their corner store, and just being here in Omaha, realizing the ingredients everybody has on hand are more like lentils and grains and nuts. So I started using more of those.
Right. I think it's great. Omaha. Describe the vegan scene in Omaha.
I don't think there's not a huge vegan community here, but there's a small dedicated one, and everybody gets really excited when vegan options pop up in restaurants. And we have a group called Vegan Omaha where just keep people up to date on what's vegan around town and have meetups and try out all the new foods. And I think a lot of restaurant owners realize that it's good for business because vegans are really loyal customers and get really excited about the food when we have those options. At my restaurant, most people that eat here aren't vegan, but that's great too.
And talk a little bit about your restaurant, Modern Love.
So
when did you open?
A little bit over a year.
Mm-hmm.
We call it Swanky Vegan Comfort Food. So the concept is classic foods with a modern twist made with love.
Made with love. And what are some of the ingredients that you use out there at Modern Love?
We try to do as local as possible. So just whatever is in season, whatever the farmers have, that looks great. So right now there's a lot of wonderful peppers in season. We even get our lentils locally, which is really nice. Just obviously Nebraska, we're going to have a lot of corn. So we have a really great corn pudding on the menu right now with mole and seitan. A lot of, like I said, just local things. So we've got like eggplant and zucchini right now. Try and use all the local herbs that we can, local microgreens, and just make everything really beautiful and fun, but still like with a familiarity. So like we do have a cheeseburger, but it's a local lentil patty and cashew cheese.
I saw a picture of that. It looked good.
Thanks.
I'd like to invite our other guests in at this time. John and Henry are here in the studio. Last time we were together, guys, we were talking about Greek food.
That's
if
right.
You remember,
yeah.
We had a lot of fun. And I'm thinking about that line in My Big Fat Greek Wedding where the aunt, the Thea, says, "What you mean you don't eat no meat?" to the fiancé. So let's talk a little bit about vegan and vegetarianism. How popular, how is that growing and advancing?
I mean, I think sort of even in the Baltimore area, at least, I can mm-hmm. think of a couple of restaurants that are still pretty much established institutions that serve mostly, if not all, probably mostly vegetarian or vegan. One World Cafe is one that springs to mind. They've been around for quite a while. You know, it being a college town, mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, I think there's sort of a built-in population here that's interested in that sort of diet. My question for Issa is, so I've always wondered, you know, for a restaurant that, you know, primarily focuses on vegetable-based dishes, like, how do you deal with the wintertime, you know, especially if you try to do local stuff?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's just even more limiting than, you know, a place that would include proteins on their menu.
Well, we have protein. It's just vegan protein.
Right.
So we still have our tofu. We still have our beans. Seitan, tempeh, things like that. Obviously, the vegetables can't all be local. A lot of the farmers do canning and storing things. Obviously, we'll have root vegetables, but yeah, during the winter, from January to March, most of our stuff is coming from California.
Gotcha.
So we're still getting the veggies. They're just not as local as we'd like them to be. So that's just really how we serve more like wintry things, like pot pie and. Just more starchy comfort foods, things like that. But I think the same way any farm-to-table restaurant in the Midwest would deal with it, which is just, you know, do your best. But you're obviously going to have to be getting your veggies elsewhere if you want fresh greens and things like that.
And what about the challenges of cooking vegan? I know that you've developed a lot of recipes over the year. Talk a little bit about the development of that and some of the ingredients.
I think... It's always just looking at stuff and then just giving it a little vegan twist. So, I mean, it could happen in any number of ways. So, I mean, if you take a classic dish like chicken piccata and then just say, what can I use instead of the chicken? You know, and you have your staples that you already know. Like, I like to use coconut oil and olive oil. For the chicken, sometimes I'll use chickpeas or make some sort of, like, patty or use something like tofu. The challenge is really, I don't think they're any more challenging than if you were cooking with meat, but you have to be a little bit more creative and a little bit more thinking about flavors a little bit more, because oftentimes, you know, you see like a chef, I'll just put bacon in it and everybody will love it. So we don't like have crutches like that.
Right.
So it's more like you really got to develop your flavors and know how to coax the flavor out of a vegetable. So just knowing those methods really helps. So I know, like, we have a cauliflower steak on the menu. So we'll steam the cauliflower first, then marinate it and give it a really nice rub, and then grill it. And then that gives it a really nice smoky, charred flavor. So just knowing how to cook those vegetables and knowing how to coax the flavor out, knowing what flavors you're looking for. It's really all about that. And then just knowing your herbs and your spices and really just having fun with it and the flavors in there, just getting it out and making it shine.
Make it shine.
Make it shine.
That's right. John has brought in some divine zucchini not crab cakes here.
Yeah, yeah. I say I'm just so excited that you're here. This is the adoration part of the show, okay? You ready?
Okay.
Sit down.
I'm ready.
Because yesterday I got an email from the producer and said, could you send over any vegan recipes? And I thought, of course I can send over vegan recipes. So I started sending some over, and then I sent, well, what's the topic of tomorrow's show? And they said that you were going to be on. And I almost fell out of the chair because I love you. I mean, you're one of my culinary heroes. I've been following you for years. I'm sitting here with the original Vegan with a Vengeance here. I have Veganomics here. I have vegan cookies. I have vegan cupcakes.
You came with a backpack.
Oh, my God. I am just so excited. I love what you do. And when we were first talking about vegan cooking and how it's changed and how it's progressed over the years, you know, you have to take some credit. You've really been instrumental and at the forefront of getting the word out. And not only getting the word out, but getting the delicious, wonderful flavors out and showing people it's not a big deal. It's not hard to make all these wonderful dishes, comfort dishes, things that we grew up with, new. And we just don't have to use animal products when we're doing it. So you really have been an inspiration. I'm like Mr. Crab Cake here. In Maryland, write a lot of books about the Chesapeake Bay. But years ago, I really started looking at vegan cooking, vegetarian cooking, and have incorporated a lot of it in the restaurant menu. And I do have to say I've taken some of your recipes and I've adapted them, and people absolutely love them. And so,
did you try the Chesapeake tempeh cakes?
No, you know, I haven't had those because we make these things called, I can't believe it's not crab cakes.
Okay.
And they're very, you know, they're not dissimilar at all, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
So in that recipe, well, I spent a couple of summers in Baltimore, actually, and worked at a vegan cafe there like 20 years ago.
Which one, Issa?
It was called Red Light, Green Light, or Potluck Cafe. It was like kind of a... it's not there anymore. It was, I think we only did it for like 6 months or so. It was in a carriage house.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a really small place that opened only at night, and I cooked there, and it was really fun. And it actually, like, a lot of recipes in Vegan with a Vengeance, the first one, were recipes that I made there.
Wait a minute, was that in Mount Vernon? I think on Preston or Biddle?
Yeah.
Holy cow, I remember that place.
Oh my God.
I think I vaguely remember going like after the bars closed and you walk up some stairs and you had miso and stuff. Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, that's so great.
Holy cow. Baltimore, man. It's just
Smalltimore.
Like
I don't remember.
It was after the bar.
Yeah. I just remember it being very bright. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. That's all I remember.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do remember the place though. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
This is a great town for such things like that and development. So talk a little bit, John, about this zucchini not crab cake that we have right here in the booth, and it smells delicious.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very simple premise. Actually, one of my sisters had given me the beginnings of the recipe years ago because she had too much zucchini growing in her yard around this time of the year. And so you're really just taking the zucchini, using it as the, you know, the replacement for crab. And we grate it down on the coarsest part of the grater, salt it just a little bit, put it into a colander, let the water drain out. And then we make like a crab cake batter, except we don't use eggs for it. We use Veganaise and some Old Bay and some mustard, Tabasco, you know, the usual things that we would put in a crab cake. We use a little panko breadcrumbs to bind it together.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, people love it. I can't tell you how much people love it. And it's a great dish all unto itself. But for people who are trying to cut back a little bit on the crab, give the crab a break, it's it's a great way to get your veggies at the same time.
Yes, indeed.
And I was saying, actually, you know, if you look in, there's a cookbook called The Maryland Way Cookbook, which is sort of a Bible for traditional Maryland recipes. And one of the recipes in there is called a mock crab cake. And, you know, I think, and who knows how old it is, probably at least 100 or so years old, probably early 20th century, late 19th century or something like that. But, you know, back then it was sort of like the poor man's crab cake. If you didn't have or couldn't afford crab meat, or it was, you know, out of season or whatever, you would substitute in zucchini. So it was not even, you know what I mean? It was again, as you say, it was a dish unto itself rather than, you know, okay, here's how I can sneak some vegetables in. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of some fun stuff like that, just like historical things that people have used instead of meat, just maybe because they were poor,
right.
But maybe because it wasn't available. But that's always fun to look into.
Definitely. Well, we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to take a short break now. We're going to ask the callers to call in, send an email with some of your vegan recipes, vegan ideas, vegetarian as well. Our phone number is 410-662-8780, or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Welcome back to a vegan edition of Midday Eats. I'm Melody Simmons, sitting in today for Dan Rodericks. My guests in the studio are Henry Hong of the Thames Street Oyster House and John Shields, head chef and owner of Gertrude's at the BMA. Also on the line is a very famous vegan author and columnist, Issa Chandra Moskowitz. She's calling in from Omaha, Nebraska, where she owns a vegan restaurant called Modern Love. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners, about your vegan dishes, some of your favorite recipes. Give us a call. Our number's 410-662-8780, or send an email to midday@wypr.org. John and Henry, are you finding more diners who are seeking a vegan menu or a vegan dish?
At Gertrude's, I do. We cater to really a diverse group of people that come to Gertrude's because we're at the Baltimore Museum of Art, and it's kind of like Baltimore's common table, people coming from everywhere. So I try to have a nice percentage of the items on the menu to be vegan. Mm-hmm. And I swear, people stop me everywhere I go and thank me for it. And also, whenever we're going to do a special dinner where it's like a prefix and you can order from courses, we all always have a complete vegan option for mm-hmm. every single course. And we sell a lot. And not necessarily to people who consider themselves exclusively vegan or even vegetarian, mm-hmm. Because it's just good.
And the flavors have changed, the consistencies have changed, and the ingredients are more popular.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. So that makes a difference.
And as you say, I think people are just simply more savvy about, and as Issa says, you know, putting together different vegetables as a base ingredient, and as she says, coaxing the flavor out with technique and spice or what have you. For us, not really. Of course, I think for most restaurant, well, we're located in sort of a touristy area and we're a seafood place, so, mm-hmm. you know, we get a lot of folks from the Midwest, not as far out as Nebraska, but mostly, you know, the Ohio area for some reason.
Right.
But those folks are coming to Baltimore. They want seafood.
They want seafood.
You know, and I think in the past, at least few or several years, a lot of the sort of special requests for guests have changed over to the gluten and wheat thing.
Yeah.
More so than the vegetarian and vegan. We always, of course, I mean, I think it would be impractical for any restaurant owner to not have some vegetarian or vegan options. Or at least be able to modify fairly easily, you know, a dish or two or three or four mm-hmm. to become, you know, vegetarian or vegan friendly. But for us, quite honestly, it's not as big as, you know, again, if we have gluten-free products,
right.
You know, that's a whole different conversation, but yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And Issa, talk a little bit about the health benefits of the vegan world, vegan lifestyle.
I don't talk too much about health stuff just because I'm not a doctor or a nutritionist or
right.
anything like that. But I could tell you I've been eating vegan for over 25 years and, you know, looking, well, I'm not going to say I look great. Okay, I kind of look great.
You do. You
I feel
do.
Great, too. And, you know, I think eat a healthy, diverse diet. You can get all the protein you need. You can get all the nutrients you need, or I can anyway. So I'm alive and kicking.
And if I may ask, and this is just really out of curiosity, so do you you don't need to take any sort of vitamin supplements, like B vitamins or anything like that?
I take B12.
Okay, so, all right.
So that's the only supplement I take, and, I mean, all the info about B12 isn't widely known, so I just take it to make sure that I'm getting it. But no, I don't take, like, any anything else. Besides that, I feel I get my omegas from things like walnuts and flax seeds, get protein everywhere, like literally from grains, from beans. There's protein in vegetables people aren't aware of. You know, you can get all the amino acids through various sources. So, yeah.
Sounds
I get
good.
My blood work done every year, and it's perfect.
It's perfect.
So,
that's a good thing. That's a good report.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of people, like, I mean, there's a lot of information out there about what meat does to people's bodies. I think there's a lot of myths that veganism is not healthy, but there's, you know, a lot of facts that state meat isn't good for you, study after study telling you what it does to your heart, to your cholesterol. So, I don't know. I feel we definitely need a lot of more information about vegan nutrition. It hasn't existed for that long, but...
Right.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good.
Well, I know you said you started cooking vegan when you were 16. Is that right?
Yep.
And before that, were you a meat eater?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up standard American diet pretty much. So I ate meat. I went vegetarian first and then vegan. But when I went vegan, I didn't really cook very much before that. So that's really what got me into cooking. And yeah, like I said, it was 1989, so there wasn't that many vegan options out there. And growing up in Brooklyn, I was able to find a lot of like different cuisines that did have a lot of vegan food, like Indian food and Ethiopian food and Caribbean food. So I was super lucky in that aspect of being around all those different cultures. But you know, a lot of food I ate, I had to cook myself, so that was great.
Mm-hmm. Issa, I was noticing, or I noticed immediately when the Forks Over Knives cookbook came out, that you had done the desserts for the book, and they're fantastic. Have you gotten a lot of feedback from the Forks Over Knives whole movement and everything around that?
Yeah, I mean, people seem to like the desserts a lot. I it was fun coming up with them because it's no oil, so that's another parameter that I had to work with. So vegan, whole grains, and no oil, and I believe the sugars had to be natural sugars. So it was a fun challenge.
Yeah, it was really cool. I was looking forward to see how you did it, and I thought you did a great job using some almond butter in it to get a little bit of the consistency that you would from some of the shortenings or other fats that we would normally.
A lot of nut butters. I use avocado.
Yeah. It was really.
And then sometimes
really...
just use things like standard like switch outs like applesauce or pureed prunes instead of oil.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think it worked really nicely. I tried a number of the recipes, and I liked
cool.
them. Well, because several years ago, I had a heart attack, and it's kind of hard for a chef, you know, who eats everything that's supposed to kill you on a regular basis. And so I had to really change my diet and be very mindful. And I had been looking at vegetarianism and veganism originally from an ethical standpoint, but then faced with your own mortality,
right?
You know, so actually, I started following pretty much, you know, that kind of a Forks Over Knives diet with low fat and mostly vegan thing. And I do have to tell you that within, you know, like 8 weeks, my cholesterol went down from almost 300 to 150.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. And all my numbers were just unbelievable. And I dropped about 14, 15 pounds and felt great. So as far as thinking about cooking this way, as far as a healthy thing, at least for me, it was, you know, pretty remarkable, and makes me very mindful of ways that we have cooked throughout the ages from traditions, not even talking about right. vegan or vegetarian. Most of the dishes from most cultures are all plant-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we stayed pretty healthy eating that way.
True. True. And you look phenomenal, too, as well.
Thank you.
I'd like to go to the phones now. We have some callers talking about our topic today, which is vegan. We invite other callers to call in. Our number is 410-662-8780, or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Sharon, you're first up. Welcome. Sharon
Hi.
From Owings Mills. Welcome to Midday.
I'm calling to give you the recipe.
Sharon, we can't hear you too well. Can you talk a little slower? As you are you on a cell phone with a speakerphone?
I'm on a cell phone with my Bluetooth.
Okay. Can you come off of the Bluetooth?
Yeah, just a sec.
Thank you. And then we're going to take, let's put Sharon back on hold if we could, and take another caller while Sharon gets her phone situation taken care of. We have Ami May in Towson. Ami, are you there?
Yes. I wanted to let the audience know about the Harmony Bakery in Baltimore at Chestnut and 35th Street. It's a vegan bakery, and it's a very good bakery.
Is that someplace where you visited before, and what do you recommend?
Times, yes, and it's a very friendly atmosphere.
It's fabulous.
It is.
Don and Renee Gorman, who everyone knows from the Waverly Farmers Market,
right.
who sell all the wonderful vegan dishes and gluten-free dishes, they opened a bakery in Hamden, and it with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It is fabulous. Unbelievable.
Is that where old New System used to be?
Just a couple doors up.
Oh, gotcha.
Right up from there.
Cool.
From, you know, on Chestnut.
Nice. So that shows that this is a movement that's really taken hold in Baltimore a little bit more as well.
Absolutely.
Which is great. Ami May, thank you so much for that tip. We'll have to head out to Hamden after the show. Sharon, are you back? Are you?
I am.
Okay. Talk a little bit about, I think you wanted to talk about ratatouille.
Yes, that's a favorite of my family. We have it in the summer. We have it like once a week. I go to the farmer's market. I get some zucchini, some yellow squash. Occasionally I'll get a patty pan squash. And I'll put different colored peppers in there and an eggplant and cook that up with some sauteed onions and garlic, and I have an herb garden, so I just grab the herbs from my garden, throw that in, and when it gets close to being soft, the vegetables, I throw in some tomatoes, and when it's done, I serve it over spaghetti. And if you're, I mean, my family isn't completely vegan, so we put grated Parmesan on there, but I have a friend who doesn't do that. She just puts it on the spaghetti, and that's the way she eats it.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for calling in, Sharon. I guess what she's talking about is you really can throw a lot of stuff in the pot, and just it's trial and error.
And, well, I mean, that's obviously that's a classic dish. You know, there's really, in a dish like that, you're trying to highlight, I mean, this is prime time for ratatouille, you know, with
exactly.
the vegetables coming out right now, and there's no need. You know, I mean, you're trying to highlight these beautiful summer squashes and the eggplant and such. And, you know, what would yeah. any meat product add to it, you know, just even from a culinary standpoint,
mm-hmm.
you know?
We've got one on the menu right now that's grilled.
Grilled ratatouille?
Yeah.
Wow. Talk about that a little.
Just the local squashes, like the caller was saying. We have whatever comes in that looks beautiful. So crookneck, straight-up zucchini, patty pan dumpling. We just grill it with garlic and olive oil, some maldon and pepper, and the eggplant as well. And then we have a tomato jam we serve it with, and fresh herbs and dill, little red wine vinegar.
Do you put it over spaghetti?
No, it's an appetizer.
Right.
It's just
right.
The tomato jam.
What about the spices that you use? I'm very interested in that because a lot of the spices are needed to jack up the dish a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we use – what I love about vegan cuisine, really, if you look at it as a singular cuisine, is it's pulling from every culture. So you can mix and match spices from Italy with spices from India, and it's allowed and fun. And it's not traditional, but it's creating these new traditions. So, I mean, we have every spice under the sun. My spirit spice is star anise, so I like to use that in barbecue, in obviously in traditional things that are like Thai spices, also in Vietnamese food. But then I'll also just throw it into drinks, like I said, throw it into the barbecue sauce, throw it into dressings, and just give it a like unexpected licorice-y flavor. I love using spices and combining spices that you normally might not see together and seeing what happens, because food is constantly evolving, and it's, you know, tomatoes didn't even exist in Italy until a couple hundred years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting what people think of as tradition and breaking tradition when those traditions are really relatively new. So I just, I think vegan cuisine kind of brings it all together, and in 100 years, nobody will know that star anise doesn't go in Kansas City barbecue.
Sounds good. I want to go back to the phone lines. We do have a question from Michael in Gardenville. Michael, are you there?
Yes.
Thanks for calling midday.
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I've been a vegetarian since 1982, so I can attest to the fact that people are a lot more accommodating nowadays. but I was wondering about marinade for tofu, because I use marinated tofu a lot and fry it, but I always use tamari sauce. I was wondering if there's a suggestion for something different or better.
I like using tamari no matter what, just because it gives that like umami saltiness, but I feel like it could be really overused. So I don't use it as the main component. I just use it as kind of a flavor booster, depending on what I'm making. And also depending on what I'm going to do with the tofu. If I'm going to grill it, I like to keep it really simple. But I'll use tamari even if I'm planning on doing, like, an Italian marinade. So I don't know how much you're using, but maybe if it's soaking in too much, just use a little bit less, use more, and then just mix in the flavors you're looking for. So with marinating, I like to use fresh herbs. So if I'm doing an Italian one, I'll do some tamari, but I'll do olive oil, red wine vinegar. Like, you definitely need the acid to kind of cut into the saltiness and also to flavor the food. Then just the fresh thyme will seep into it. And then the grill will just give it a lot of flavor. If I plan on, like, battering and frying it, I try to keep the flavors less powerful and put more of the flavor into the breading. I'm trying to think of what we have on the menu right now that has marinated tofu on it. Oh, we have a smoked tofu. So we just keep that really simple and then just let the smoke flavor shine through. But if I'm doing an Indian one, I'll just put some curry powder in it and then just kind of taste the marinade just until it tastes a little bit salty to you and doesn't taste like cloyingly soy sauce. I feel like soy sauce is one of those things people tend to overuse. Because, I don't know, that's what you marinate tofu in. But if you use just a hint of it, just to get the flavor in there.
Well, it sort of depends on what tofu you're talking about as well. I mean, there's a really wide range of, you know, I guess the firmness. I mean, if you go to the store, you can get firm, extra firm, whatever it is. If it's the super firm stuff, which I'm assuming that's what you use for grilling because it tends to hold up better, you know, when you're manipulating it on a grill or whatever. Obviously, you can marinate it for a little bit longer than you would even just a regular firm tofu. You know, in Korean food, there's tofu that, you know, you marinate just for a couple of minutes before you serve it, because, you know, you still want, if it's high quality, good tofu, you want to taste the tofu as well. It still has flavor on its own. You know, it's its own thing. Obviously, it's very versatile to use, you know, as a substitute for other ingredients, whether it's John and I were talking about this earlier. We used to put it in smoothies to make it to add richness and creaminess. Mm-hmm. Blend it in. We used to use soft tofu for that. I think the brownies that John brought uses that as well. So, but, you know, if you're looking at it, I guess it all depends on if you're trying to, you know, replicate some other texture with tofu. You can certainly add, like, acid will tend to firm it up after a certain amount of time. But yeah, you know, if you're going to use soy sauce, always use sparing. You can always add salt. You can never take it away. You know what I mean? So, depending on how durable the tofu that you're using is, should affect how long you marinate it for and how salty or how highly flavored the marinade as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we are going to take another short break right now. We're going to nibble on some of these tofu brownies that John brought in from Gertrude's. Thank you, John. They're divine. We'll be back. Stay with us. We want to hear from you. Give us a call at midday, 410-662-8780. Let's talk vegan. Stay with us. Welcome back to our vegan special edition of Midday Eats. I'm Melody Simmons, sitting in today for Dan Rodericks. As always, Henry Hong of the Thames Street Oyster House and John Shields, head chef and owner at Gertrude's at the Baltimore Museum of Art, are here with us in Midday. And joining us by phone from Omaha, Nebraska, is Issa Chandra Moskowitz, author of 8 cookbooks, including Vegan with a Vengeance, which just came out in June. It's a reissue of a 10-year-old edition of her very first cookbook. Issa, welcome. Welcome, guys. And Issa, especially from Omaha. Welcome back to Midday. I have an email from a listener, Stan. He wants to know, he has a question. I have yet to find a vegan cheese that tastes as good as a Colby or Brie. What is new and delicious in this area for vegans, or must one simply develop a taste for the soy cheeses?
Yes, no, don't develop a taste for the soy cheese. I think a big thing with vegan cooking, well, when I first started writing recipes, was that I didn't want to depend on, like, just taking a recipe and putting vegan cheese on it, because really, it's one note. It doesn't improve anything. Like, maybe it's okay on pizza, but it just wasn't interesting and wasn't delicious for me, so I started developing sauces and things like that instead of cheeses. However, in the past 5 years or so, I'd say, there's been so many new vegan cheeses on the market that are, like, cultured, real cheese and created the same way dairy cheese is, just with vegan starters. So instead of using, a lot of them are nut-based, and I'd say actually probably every single one is nut-based, so really delicious cultured cashew cheese and almond cheese, things made with that taste like brie, cheeses that have a rind on them, stinky cheeses, like those things are all happening. It's a really great progress. A couple of the ones I can recommend are Miyoko's Creamery, and that's out of San Francisco. On the East Coast, there's Dr. Cow's, and I wish I looked this up before because I forget brand names, but there's Tree Line, and there's Kite Hill is really great, too, and that's available in a lot of supermarkets now, and it's got a really, really yummy cream cheese. Like, when I was growing up with the vegan cream cheese, it really tasted like plastic, I'll be honest. So it's really nice to find these cheeses that taste creamy and delicious and wonderful with no, like, weird aftertaste, and just really it's real food. So I think that's what I look for when I'm looking for a vegan cheese, is I make sure it doesn't say, like, flavoring or, you know, tapioca. Like, it's got to have ingredients, you know, not that are real. So I look for things like cashew and cultures.
I think that's pretty, one of the most exciting things about being a chef and a cookbook author is to find that your ingredients are becoming more mainstream and available out there, and also better texture and developed.
Yeah, it is. It's very exciting because these are artisan food makers who are really doing things in a traditional manner with traditional techniques, but coming up with a whole new line of products. And mm-hmm. so it is. It's pretty exciting, actually.
Where do you see it going in the next, say, 5 years?
I think it's just going to grow. Mm-hmm. It's growing as now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because people
Even
are just
necessity,
more.
Even out of necessity, it's going to grow. I mean, we can't sustain the meat eating. So even mainstream scientists tell us this, that you have to cut down on your meat eating, you have to cut down on your dairy. So for necessity, people are going to be eating less meat, less cheese, less dairy. So I think it's wonderful that vegans are rising to the occasion and making these foods delicious too.
We do have a caller, Amon in Baltimore. He has a question about how to eat vegan. Amon, welcome to Midday.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Great, yes. So I'm listening and hearing all of these wonderful ideas on how to prepare vegan meals, et cetera. I really don't like to cook. I'm not a cook. I don't enjoy cooking, but I love the idea of eating vegan. What kind of recommendations could you give to someone who is not really comfortable in a kitchen, but really, you know, would like to switch over to vegan?
Issa?
Well, I can tell you, before I was vegan, I didn't love cooking. So maybe you could follow one recipe and see how you like it. Barring that, there are more and more vegan options in restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend, you know, starting with soups or stews and go with maybe, you know, Moosewood is a good cookbook. And going with some, you know, ethnic recipes that are already established. You know, I think it's a Senegalese peanut stew that's really, I mean, these are things you can throw in a crock pot even, or even just a pot with very little other techniques other than, you know, simmering mm-hmm. and, of course, prepping the vegetables and things like that, you know, as a starting point. Rather than, you know, going and trying to make, you know, for instance, as Issa mentioned, a cauliflower tastes like a grilled steak.
Right.
You know, that's a little advanced, but, you know, people have been eating just vegetable-based dishes and meals forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a good starting point. You know, getting those ingredients might be a little bit more challenging than simply going to the grocery store. Maybe you have to hit a couple of ethnic grocery stores or what have you. That would be my recommendation. I remember that's one of the first vegan meals that I cooked was a North African stew from the Moosewood cookbook.
Yeah. Hey, I write cookbooks too.
I know. I hesitated mentioning that. I'm sorry.
Like a lot of them.
And also, I think, Amon, you might want to start small, but this could be the beginning of a whole new lifestyle for you. That in the kitchen, like get the crock pot. I think that's a great idea and start that way and start to develop your own recipes, some of your own specialties. Christina? Are you there? Welcome to Midday.
Oops, let me take you off speaker. Sorry. Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share that I've been vegan for about 7 years, and a lot of people think it's really expensive. They ask me how I can afford to be vegan, how I can afford to cook all the foods that I make, and I just want to say it doesn't have to be. You can get lots of vegetables, lots of beans, make meals for really cheap. Also, if you don't substitute a lot of fake meats and cheeses, that helps save money too.
Right, right.
I was going to say, yeah. Anytime you're supplanting, you know, meat based ingredients for plant based, generally speaking, you're going to save money. Particularly when you're talking about legumes like, you know, lentils or beans instead mm-hmm. of, you know, an order of magnitude cheaper most of the time. When you talk about, again, sort of specialized and exotic ingredients, yeah, maybe. You might have to change your pantry basics over, you know, include tamari, which is, you know, the soy sauce with no wheat and all that, you know, those sorts of things. But once you have that established as your, you know, as your base kitchen, you know, with these ingredients that you can use to make all these other vegan dishes. And yeah, I can't imagine how it would be more expensive to be honest with you.
Yeah. Keep lentils around. Protein,
yeah. There's
a lot of things like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And John, talk about the local movement, the farm-to-table movement. That's helped to raise the awareness of eating more vegetables and also partaking of the local bounty, we're seeing now at the farmers markets.
Absolutely. I mean, I think as the farmers market movement grows, it kind of reconnects people with the land. It reconnects them with with what we have right around us in every region, in every neighborhood. And we generally find that most of those things, if we look at it from a percentage, two-thirds of it at the farmer's market is either vegetables or fruits that is supplemented with some animal protein.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, get very excited about it. Just seeing the colors, the vibrancy of it makes you want to go home and cook.
Right.
And so I think just that in itself has really been instrumental in getting people to start to eat better and think about what they're putting into their bodies.
Right, exactly. And I think that I think if you look in the frozen foods, you're going to see some, I don't want to call it, you know, lean cuisine, but there are frozen vegetarian and vegan dishes that you can find out there now, too. Do you find that
yeah.
as well? Is that, does that mean that it's kind of elevated to another level, Lisa?
Well, a more convenient level for sure. I'm pretty open that I'm addicted to vegan microwave burritos, so I don't think there's any shame in grabbing one. So, yeah, I think it's great that that there's a lot of, like, healthier microwave options out there for sure.
And I'm wondering if we can take one more phone call. We're winding down. We're running out of time, but Steve in Baltimore has a really good question. Steve, you're on midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi, it's not a question. It's really a comment. I'm really all for people eating less meat. As a matter of fact, I only eat meat maybe once a week. However, I think a lot of people don't understand if they're going to become a vegan, like I hear some callers saying, they really need to understand that there are certain things that come from animal products that they don't get. And one of your guests just said that she takes vitamin B12. And one of the dangers I see, and I have some background in nutrition, is that vitamin B12 is stored in the human body for 2 to 5 years. So if you become a vegan tomorrow and you don't get vitamin B12 because you're not familiar with what your body is missing from the meats you used to eat, it might be 2 years before you develop symptoms. And then, of course, you're not going to connect it with having become a vegan. So I think every time I hear a show about veganism, I almost always hear the guest, and your guest said it too, I'm not a nutritionist.
Okay.
Anybody who's thinking of doing this really should talk to a nutritionist before they do this so they understand that there are a couple of things they're going to be missing. And the other thing is is for women who are going to become pregnant.
Okay.
Folate and vitamin B12 are extremely important, and they're really only found in significant amounts in meat.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Steve. I think it's good to look at the whole landscape, don't you guys?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's critical. I mean, if you're going to make a wholesale, you know, an all-encompassing change in your diet, you should go into it informed, certainly, you know, make sure all your nutritional needs are getting. That's why I mentioned that to Issa earlier, and, you know, she responded very frankly, and that's cool, you know.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Well, this has been a great discussion today. We've talked from soup to nuts on the vegan, a whole scale here. We've got our not crab cake in here. We've got our brownies. We're set for the day. I want to say thank you to Issa out in.
Yeah, thank you guys. That was a real pleasure, and I liked the trip down memory lane to Baltimore.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, man.
Yes.
It was fun.
Thank you so much to our guests and to Henry Hong of the Thames Street Oyster House and John Shields, owner of Gertrude's at the Baltimore Museum of Art, and also in Omaha, Nebraska, Issa Chandra Moskowitz, who's author of 8 cookbooks, including one that was just reissued in June, Vegan with a Vengeance. I'm Melody Simmons, sitting in today for Dan Rodericks, and have a great weekend.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.